I think this is very important. We cannot do that enough. We read through the scriptures, fasting and prayer is a very important part of our ministry, and without that, we're going about it our own way and not the Lord's way, and we need to be mindful of that. We certainly don't want to be the hypocrites of the church, and as Tom prayed, and so in order for us not to be hypocritical, naturally we are. We need to rely on the Lord and follow His precepts so that we can be His men that He needs us to be. Like I said, this comes from Elder Gary Kuntz. He put this together, and it's the Elder's Quorum and the Restoration, as you can see, a historical perspective from church records. This is Gary's work, and there's several points in here that I want to point out before we get into a discussion about some of this stuff. And so just keep in mind that I'm not as familiar with it as he would be, but I do think it's very important for us to see a lot of these things. We will talk about kind of briefly what the definition of a quorum is. We've done this several times, but there are some who haven't heard it, so it'd be good to know that. Who authorizes their formation? Well, who can do this? How are the elders' quorums organized? We'll kind of skip through that, and it kind of basically talks about, you know, offices and things and inside, you know, like a treasurer. And I spoke to Uncle Dan. I said, where's our money? Who's taking care of the quorum's money? Well, we don't have any. So, you know, I guess the treasurer is not really important for us right now. And then what is the function of the elders' quorum? And that last one I think is pretty important. Why are we here? And that will be our message that we take into the rest of the church. So, number one is the definition of a quorum. You know, there's all kinds of legal things in our system here in the United States. We have quorums. Let's see, the Webster's Dictionary: a bench of justices or such a number of officers or members as is competent by law or constitution to transact business as a quorum of the House of Representatives. Let's see, Webster's New World Dictionary says the minimum numbers of members required to be present at an assembly before it can be valid to proceed to transact business. So for an elder's quorum, it would be 49, or 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, in our case. The story of the church, see, there's other references of what a quorum is, but basically what a quorum is that it's a selected body of men who kind of a, I'm thinking of another word for it, but I think you all get the idea, but we are a quorum. Now, the several elders composing this Church of Christ are to meet in conference once every 3 months. This is in the Doctrine and Covenants, section 17. Or from time to time, as said conferences shall direct or appoint, and said conferences are to do whatever church business is necessary to be done at the time. Section 44, 1 and 2, verse 1a says, behold, thus saith the Lord unto you, my servants, it is expedient in me that the elders of my church should be called together from the east and from the west and from the north and from the south by letter or some other way. And it shall come to pass that inasmuch as they are faithful and exercise in me, faith in me, I will pour out my spirit upon them in the day that they assemble themselves together. It sounds nice, doesn't it? And it shall come to pass that they shall go forth into the regions round about and preach repentance unto the people. And many shall be converted, inasmuch that ye shall obtain power to organize yourselves according to the laws of men, that your enemies may not have power over you, that you may be preserved in all things, that you may be enabled to keep my laws, that every band may be broken wherewith the enemy seeketh to destroy my people. How important is an elder's quorum? Assemble yourselves together, and it shall come to pass, he says, we will go forth into the regions round about. We have a pretty big region here, this Midwest region. We'll go to the regions round about and preach repentance unto the people. And many shall be converted. We're not very actively engaged in these kind of things, so maybe that's why many are not converted. Brother Dan?
In your previous slide, it talked about elders' conference. I think that's where our friends get their justification for, you know, forming the elders' conference. Could Brother Ruby, I mean, I know he has some insight on this. Could he share with us what the elders' conference is? And
up here, what are they talking about, the elders in conference?
Yeah, and is that justification for what is taking place with our neighbors, or what is it? I mean, should we be doing that, or is it more than just an elders' conference?
Well, section 17 to 13 was put to Joseph Smith III while he was presiding over the general conference, and a request was made that he give an interpretation of what that referred to. And he said, as the president of the church presiding over the conference. Now, what that means is that this is the word of the Lord, because the president of the church interprets the law. He said, this scripture, 17:13, refers to district conferences. And so, when it talks about the elders composing the church, they're meeting in conference once in 3 months, or from time to time, as the conference directs, then what that means is that the conferences are presided over by the elders who bring the church together to deliberate on whatever's appropriate for that district. And that's so Joseph Smith III is very clear on that. And a lot of the churches don't like that interpretation. For instance, the Remnant Church doesn't accept that interpretation. They had a, quote, elders conference that organized their church to begin with from the top down. So their elders, which by the way included high priests and 70 and all, they organized their church, the elders doing it. The Conference of Restoration Elders doesn't accept that interpretation, because they think that the elders should be making all the decisions in the church, and that the members and the Aaronic priesthood don't have a role in the decision-making process. But Joseph Smith III is very clear on that, and that's found in Church History, Volume 5, page... Well, I don't have my Doctrine and Covenants out here. Just speaking from memory, I think it's...
I was going to say, he is not going to tell us what page that is.
Let's see. It's volume 5, page 402.
Okay.
Is where Joseph Smith III, and that's the thing that we have to understand, is that he was presiding over the conference as the president of the church. The conference puts that question to him. Now, Joseph Smith III does this many times in church history. He's presiding over the conference, and the conference puts a question to him, and he interprets the scripture. Now, according to our understanding, that should be the word of the Lord that speaks there. If you go to section 121 of the Doctrine and Covenants, you'll see that what they did was compile a series of questions that had been put to Joseph Smith III, and they said, these are revelatory, we're gonna put them in as a revelation, which they did. So that happened regularly with him. It didn't happen that way nearly as often with his father. Of course, his father didn't get to preside for 54 years over the church. So that's the best I can do on such short notice.
Well, you did okay. Thank you. The thing I wanted to point out here is that we are to be, as elders, engaged in, as the elders' quorum, or the elders of the church, as the people should be called together, we are to be engaged in preaching the gospel to the regions round about. And so if we are not doing that, we as a quorum can, if we are organized enough, we could help the 70 do their job by laying some groundwork for them ahead of time. So by preaching repentance to the people. Yes?
Go back one slide. I think it's important. Back one, right.
Okay.
I think it's important to realize that section 44 identifies that if the elders assemble themselves together and discuss these issues, they'll have power to organize themselves according to the laws of man. So that implies that we're supposed to be organized according to the laws that we labor under here in such. And don't break the laws of man, is what I'm pointing out. I think that's kind of significant, because some of the groups started back in the mid-80s, didn't see any need to organize according to the laws of man. Now it turns out that because of some laws that have been implemented since 9/11, that if we had not organized according to the laws of man, we wouldn't have been recognized. We would have had some real problem distributing funds internationally and all. So I think there's some real good counsel there to try and be in compliance, not only with the laws of God, but with the laws of man also.
Section 85 says, "Behold, I will hasten my work in its time. I give unto you who are the first laborers in this last kingdom a commandment that you should assemble yourselves together and organize yourselves." Goes on, tells us what we should do and purify our hearts, cleanse our hands and our feet. 104:31. I think 104 is one of the more powerful sections in the Doctrine and Covenants, but just from where I read, it's loaded with information for us regarding our priesthood. To the Church of Christ in the land of Zion, in addition to the church laws respecting church business, verily I say unto you that the Lord of hosts, there must needs be presiding elders to preside over those who are of an office of elder. And again, the duty of the president over the office of elders is to preside over 96 elders and to sit in council with them and to teach them according to the covenants. This presidency is a distinct one from that of 70 and is designated for those who do not travel into all the world. So I actually called a 70 last night and asked him, you know, what his interpretation was of this. This is a distinct one from that of 70 in that his opinion was that the presidency of the elders quorum, or the president, is not to travel. His main purpose is to be here with this quorum and to lead that quorum of 96 elders. And I don't know if we have 96 elders in the city of Independence, do we? We do? South Chrysler probably has that many in themselves. They're a huge branch. So, well, we need to be together. It would be wonderful if we could have one or two quorums in the Independence District. We need to set our standards high and try to reach those. Here's some general conference resolutions from 1877, and then there's another one right here from 1852 to 1923, I think is probably when it was implemented and used. Whereas the general conferences have the power to authorize the organization of quorums, resolve said conferences have the power to authorize such changes or transfers of the members of such quorums as the interest of the church may demand. And it talks about district conferences and other things like that. Another one here: the ministry and the several quorums seem inadequate to meet the demands upon them. Resolved, we ask the Lord to reveal His will concerning these various quorums that they may be properly filled. So then the Lord responded through Joseph Smith III in this revelation: I will, in asking of me, you did well. I think that's good counsel there. Ask of me. We tend to debate and labor over things that we have no business laboring over. Let's just ask the Lord and see what He says. Now, if we had a prophet, it'd be a lot easier. Anyway, He says, I will hasten my work in its time. You cannot now prosecute missions in many foreign lands, nor is it expedient that the elders at the first quorums be sent out of the land of America. Nor is it expedient now to further fill up the quorums, except it be the elders, priests, teachers, and deacons, which ye may do as ye deem wise by the direction of a conference. Basically, we're just pointing out there that the conference can organize a quorum.
Mm-hmm. Notice the term conference right there, taking out of section 118.
In the bottom, that last word.
Right. It's okay. It's a small c. So it's not a general conference. In the Doctrine and Covenants, whenever you're referring to a general conference, that C is capitalized. That section 118 identifies that you can organize quorums by conference, small c. So it's on that basis that in, I don't remember the year, 1902 or something, early 1900s, the general conference disbanded all quorums that had been organized, all quorums of elders, priests, teachers, and deacons that had been organized by the general conference, and referred that back to district conferences, and let the district conferences organize those quorums. So, conference small c is important.
It's very interesting. Also, this word conference, small c, is used throughout the scriptures, and you know, we tend to think of it as a big C and a big deal, but what we're doing here is a form of a conference. So, let's see, General Conference Resolution adopted in 1897, whereas vacancies sometimes occur in quorum organizations by reason of ordinations or other causes, resolved that when such vacancies occur in quorum of elders, they may be filled by the unanimous concurrences of the officers of such quorum, and members so enrolled to be subject to ratification of members of quorum. So we have a few here that are subject to our vote today, later this morning. Yeah, well, this thing sticks, I guess. Another general conference resolution. I want to get through these. So organizations be affected in mission, stakes, districts, or large branches. So, and I think there's a Doctrine and Covenants scripture which talks about that, or maybe it's just a resolution, but this is saying that those quorums are to be just what Rudy is saying, within the districts and the stakes and the branches. Only quorums which are general in organization need to report directly to the general conference. So like our elders conference, our elders quorum of the general conference, they're required to report to the general conference. But our quorum here is required, we're required to report to the independent district. Others should report to the conference of immediate jurisdiction, whether stake or district. I like this. Each quorum should file regular reports with the first presidency and such matters concerning quorums as are necessary to reach the general conference. So all the quorums, you know, report to somebody. So there is some sort of accountability. Elders' quorums authorized in the early church and reorganization. This Kirtland Elders' Quorum. In 1836, I was reading in the Doctrine and Covenants somewhere, or maybe it was actually on here, and there were some missions that were put out because of that Elders' Quorum, or from that particular Elders' Quorum. Far West Elders' Quorum was formed on April 7th, 1838, just 2 years later. I wanted to point this out. Has any of you heard of this name here? Kind of a quiet individual, but he was the first, of the conference. Was the wasn't he the one at, he was the first Elders' Quorum president, okay, at Amboy Conference. All right, so Stephen J. Stone, and we haven't heard his name, but he was the first. It's just important. Yes.
Just point out that he was chosen president of the Elders' Quorum by the conference, not by the quorum. That same conference chose the first president of the High Priest Quorum and set those individuals apart. We don't do it that way now. The quorum chooses its own leader and then goes to the conference for approval.
We'll get into that when we get into some of that, because there's other resolutions and things that talk about that. There once again is a capital C, so that was what Rudy was referring to, the general conference, I think. That was a general conference appointed that man to be the Elders' Quorum president. There you go. It's chosen by the voice and vote of quorum members. A quorum president is required. Set apart by laying on of hands. We practice that. We do both of those things. Ordinations of elders, quorum presidents. I think it's an interesting word there, ordinations. we call it setting apart. But here in church history, they call it ordination. The elders, quorum presidents were performed at Kirtland and Far West in 1836 and 1838. By someone with higher authority, probably, I guess that would have been, you look here, Alva Beeman was ordained or set apart by Joseph Smith Sr. and Sidney Rigdon, who were, we know who he was. They were both the first presidency of the church. David Whitmer, John Whitmer, W.W. Phelps, just scamming through this. They were voted unanimously by the whole assembly. So the assembly voted that every president of high priests and elders be ordained by higher authority. And the president of any quorum having counselors may ordain them himself. So the president should be ordained by or set apart by somebody who is of higher authority, and then the counselors can be ordained by the president himself, or may, so it could be anybody. Go through all this. We talked about issue licensing in conjunction with the clerk, and we're not that organized yet, and at this point it's really not that necessary. It'd be neat to be a part of a club where there's only 13 members, but we've got a bigger picture than that. Counselors to the president are chosen by the president. First and second counselor, or you know, two counselors, they're approved by the quorum, by our voice and vote, and once again, the number four, they're set apart by the laying on of hands. The clerk or secretary of the quorum, does it say that they are set apart as well? It says quorum officers' ordinations in the reorganization, so it would make, I believe it would be the clerks and the treasurer and everybody would be set apart. Is that correct, Brother Tom?
The clerks were actually appointed when the body came together, and the clerk would alter from time to time as who was present to do that and who the quorum selected to do that at any given quorum meeting. I don't think that it refers to anybody but the presidents of the quorum and the counselors to the presidents of the quorum.
Okay.
Rudy might disagree.
Rudy?
I don't disagree. I just say that the rule is very clear. The president and his counselors are to be set apart.
Uh-huh.
Any other setting apart would be optional.
Okay.
And I don't think that the reorganization used that very well. I think we should have tried to set people apart to specific roles more often than we did, but we didn't do that very well. But certainly the president and his counselors are required to be set apart. The others is just optional for them.
Okay. Brother Dennis?
We've even set apart ministers that went to visit somebody to, you know, when they wanted to set people apart to go and talk to Debbie Wallace.
Mm-hmm.
Or, yeah, not Debbie Wallace.
Wallaceby.
We've set people apart on missionary trips before they went to missionary trips. So I think if we're doing setting parts, I think it's important that you know, we do it and do it humbly and do it for the right reason.
Mm-hmm. This is true. There's other things that we'll get into a little bit, reconciliation. I think there's some pretty heavy stuff that we could be involved in that I think we should probably get involved in at some point. And not too far down the road. Confession of sins. I think we should get to the point where we look at each other as brothers. We get to the point where we've labored together and we can trust each other and we can have this confidence in each other to where we can share things within this quorum. This is one that I'd like to talk about a little later. The committee formed to visit quorum members. And then, of course, quorum judicial action. Hopefully we never have to do that, but if so, I guess we'll come back to this slide and we'll figure that out. There's other things about members. This I found interesting. Priests quorum recommended one of their number as a fit brother to be ordained into the elders quorum. It's not completely unheard of. You know, we do take priesthood very seriously, and we do expect it to come from revelation. But it is not unheard of for the quorum to come together and say, listen, this guy belongs somewhere else, and just pay attention to it. And go ahead, Tom.
Well, that's also done by the elders' quorum in saying that somebody is a fit brother to be ordained to the office of 70,
mm-hmm.
or a brother is fit to be ordained to the office of high priest.
Yeah.
Because he may not be on the high priest radar, but if somebody says, we believe he's fit, then they'll take notice of that person and pray about that person, and they will determine whether or not they agree that it's appropriate at this time for him to be set apart to that person.
Right. We are dealing with men, and, you know, there's only one high priest here. I guess there is one. But, you know, they don't affiliate with us as much as we affiliate with each other. So that is it. But it's not also saying that we will legislate that or force that. The priest quorum recommended one of their brother as to be a part of that number. Dennis?
Yeah, I read that part in that book, and it said that they were meeting at the same time, basically in the same building, and they were, the person was recommended, taken up to the elders' quorum, and they accepted him pretty much immediately, from what I understand from the record. So it was all done in just one little area. So
Brother Shear?
How would that, I can see where that can be done, but I mean, would that originate with a branch? Where does a branch play a role in that?
Well, let me respond and just see where we go, Rudy. This word here, I think, is pretty strong, recommended, and I think it's recommended, but you can recommend it to the pastor or whatever, and I don't think it takes anything out of the hands. I think from the elders to a different office, we're dealing with a different ball game here. You're dealing with the quorum separate, and those don't come through pastors, whereas the priest does. I think a priest quorum could look at their an individual and formulate that recommendation and send it on, forward it to a pastor. They do not, as far as I know, and Rudy will speak to this, I'm sure, do not have the authority to process calls like that. So, Rudy?
The Kirtland Elders Quorum record is very clear that none of these meetings were closed meetings. We had a resolution on that recently, None of these meetings were closed meetings. Anyone could attend. And they didn't necessarily have voice or vote, only the elders did. And the elders often, in this record, in the Kirkland Elders Quorum record, would discuss an issue and then determine that it was appropriate to ordain someone to the office of elder, and they would vote on that, approve it, and then they would carry out the ordination right there. I know that we don't have that procedure, haven't followed that procedure for many years, ever since under Fred M. Smith, when all calls the office of Melchizedek Priesthood had to go through the first presidency first. That kind of put the end to other options for doing that. But nevertheless, in the early restoration, the quorum, the elders' quorum, did exercise that type of authority. I'm not saying we go back to that. I'm just saying that's the way it was.
I think it's interesting, though, that Chuck, at our last all priesthood meeting, he talked about the pastoral aspect of priesthood, and together we need to have that in mind, that we are a pastoral group of individuals. And so, as men who consider the priesthood, that quorum meeting would have been pastoral, and Rudy said there were others, members of the church, who were there. You had a congregation of people there who had voice, anyway, not so much vote. Tom, I'm going to let Steve speak. He had his hand up, and then we'll come to you.
I was just going to say that most of these, or many of these references from the Kirkland Elders Quorum record, I think that the Independent District Elders Quorum president and maybe the secretary should get together and make sure there is a record of the Independence District Elders Quorum, make a record of any resolutions that we've passed over the last 2 or 3 years, have a running history of who's been various presidents, counselors, and make that available to Bobby, or at least compile them and make sure we're having a running history and record of all that.
It's a great suggestion. I wrote it down. We'll see where it goes. I think your president heard you too, so. Mm-hmm. Brother Tom?
You'll notice in this was given in 1836. This is done in 1836. The concept of no one being ordained into any office of priesthood in this church without the approval of the vote of that branch to which they belong didn't come around until after the reorganization. And so these practices that are here are pre-reorganization practices. There was no such commandment when these were given. that there should be a vote of the branch at that time. So their practices are different because they did not have the succeeding revelations.
Good point. Rudy?
I might point out that 2 years ago, I think this quorum decided that it was going to vote on the minutes of the quorum meetings so that they were official minutes. So there ought to be a, you know, when you're talking about some type of a elders quorum record, there at least ought to be the beginnings of that in place. The secretary would know all about that.
And he's ready.
Yeah, I mean, anytime we have a business session, we have minutes that are approved, and we have those records. It'd be nice also. But whenever we just have a class, I stopped making a record of that, but maybe that's not right. Because I think classes, even with handouts like this, should be kept and preserved for the record so that if we don't have to teach the same class again, or at least for the record of what was taught. I've got some of Tom's notes and his classes, and we have some notes from classes, but we're not taking minutes from the classes. So.
Well, I think it'd be a good idea to take minutes. I mean, even if it's just a little paragraph of what was taught. But today we're going to have a discussion on some things, and it'd be nice to, as we grow, and man, when our members, you know, when we have three Independence District Elders quorums, we can go back and look at our infancy and teach the history of what was taught, and go back and look at how the Lord led us in some of those things. So,
start taking notes.
Yeah, I wasn't saying that, but I kind of was, I guess. All right, I want to get through all this. We kind of have a good idea of what all this is going.
Go back.
Okay.
What's that one F there?
Okay, approve or reject request for ordinations. The Council of Presidency of the Church at Kirtland resolved that no one be ordained to an office in the church in Kirtland without the voice of that quorum assembled. Any thoughts? It sounds like they wanted everything to come through them. Personally, the way I'm reading the history of this thing, it appears that Kirtland Elders Quorum, what's that R stand for?
Record.
Record. That Elders Quorum was a pretty powerful quorum. They were probably loaded. And they were probably very active. I think.
One of the first quorums.
When the priests come up with a recommendation, I think they can say no, you can't ordain. I think Brother Tom brought up a good point. I think we should kind of parallel some of these things and you know see what the other side of it is after 1860. What changed as far as calling and ordaining priesthood? Tom.
In the early church. And somebody that's even better familiar with church history than I am can address this. But in the early church, the quorums were established to regulate all the elders and all the priests and all the teachers and all the deacons. The elders' quorum regulated who would become an elder and who wouldn't become an elder. And that regulation of eldership was held within the quorum. Later, that moved out to the branches so that anyone, a branch regulated who were to become elders. But in the early church, it was all in the elders' quorum.
Well, and also, I'm going to kind of tie this into the previous one about the recommendation. I don't know, we get the cart before the horse sometimes in respect to what we're thinking, and recommendations come often after the fact. And the fact would be maybe someone was called to an office of elder. And then they would ask, does anyone have a recommendation to this person for that? And we often do that in the branch where we have people stand and testify that they have, by the power of the Spirit, been enlightened as to the call for that person. And so, you know, the elders' quorum could have easily have asked the priest quorum to give a recommendation of that person if they had a call. We don't know necessarily all the histories of every aspect of that. In this regard here, what are they concerned, what's the office that they're concerned with, ordained to an office in the church in Kirtland? And I would wonder if that's something beyond priesthood, like we would say, like a president or a counselor, or are they also including priesthood?
Of that quorum assembled, that's the definition of who they're talking about. I finished it.
But there still could be a president of the quorum or a counselor.
Okay. Yeah, well, Tom pointed something out that I missed, and I ought to reread this, but a council of the presidency of the church at Kirtland, so the council, the presidency of the church at Kirtland, or you call them the district president or the pastor and his counselors of that church, resolved that no one be ordained to an office in the church in Kirtland, so it could be a priest, teacher, deacon, elder, anything, without being, without the consent of, or the voice anyway, being expressed by that particular quorum. So if it's a deacon, by their quorum. If their quorum says, no way, we don't want this guy, then perhaps he won't be ordained.
So let's say that this is the church at Kirtland and it has several branches, 10 branches. One of the branches, presiding elders, then has a calling to an office of elder for one of the members of that branch. Then that member, according to what we're seeing here, would have been brought before the quorum of elders.
And subject to that scrutiny, yes or no?
Before they would be ordained.
That's what it sounds like.
Which doesn't seem like our practice.
No. Well, like Tom was saying, things have changed. Another thing that is different is, in our situation today, we're independent branches. And I mean, even though we are together, we are still fairly independent. And you know, one of the things that has happened over the last 20 or 30 years, a branch will take action against a member or a priesthood member. Well, they go to another branch and they can serve in whatever capacity they desire. So there's no accountability. Whereas here, they were bringing that accountability to that district or that the churches in Kirtland. Tom?
When it says the church in Kirtland, okay, the church in Kirtland was organized like a state. It had three presidents. It had a council of 12 who was the standing high council. They had a bishop and his counselors. It was organized just like it was the whole church, except they didn't have their own apostles. They had 12 high counselors. The same thing was true of the church in Zion and the church at Far West. They were organized in the same way. Each had their own presidency, their own standing high council, and so on. And we do that in stakes, or we used to do that in stakes. That's how it became in stakes. So when they're talking about the church at Kirtland, they're talking about a highly organized church. And it includes all the branches round about, probably for 50 to 100 miles. And there was where these branches were scattered out around Kirtland, but they came to Kirtland for their business. And so we're not talking about a branch in Kirtland or a district in Kirtland. We're talking about something far more highly organized than that.
Okay, I think we've exhausted that discussion. That was a good discussion, though. Yeah, I think it's good to understand. I think that puts into perspective where we are today and how disorganized we are, even in our small organization here in Independence. this one was important. Quorum meeting for prayer and testimony. I would like to recommend, I'll do that a little later, that we do that regularly. Assignment of elders to travel. We don't assign anybody to travel. I don't even know if we really have the authority to do that, but it would be nice if we had, were organized enough that we could assist in that cause. Steve?
I got a call from Dave Drummond, who asked, kind of in our conversation anyway, we set up a system, asking priests and elders from Independence to travel to Heartland District to preach. And I found someone for each of the 6 months, January through June. Now looking for people through June, July through December, if anybody wants to volunteer, you can see me. It's actually ultimately Dave Drummond's decision, but I know Tom's been up there. And
I've been doing it for 3 months.
Okay, I didn't realize. Yeah, I heard that Tom was gone up there, independent of me looking for somebody, but I just volunteered that in a conversation with Dave Drummond, and he eagerly jumped on it. And they have 3 branches that need preachers every month. I just promised to send him 1 name per month.
That is a very practical application of an elder's quorum. I think that's something that each one of us could be involved in. And we can really get involved in situations like that. And, when these things arise, I think our first reaction is to go to our branch. We should look at each other as springboards for those kind of things and brothers who are willing to assist each other in that. So I think we should, there's several of us here, we could probably fill the rest of Tom's slots, or Steve's slots. Tom?
Well, I've advocated for years, priests, teachers, and deacons. You don't have to wait for somebody to organize a home visiting program. You can take the initiative. You can go visit anybody in the church in your branch that you want to, anytime you want to, and you can take another priest with you, and it will be a priesthood visit. You don't have to wait for the branch to organize something and tell you who you're going to visit. You should be able to recognize the needs in your branch and to get together and go visit people accordingly, and just visit people for the edification of all of you together, the family and your as priesthood. The reason I started doing this, I decided that after all of this time talking about the Irani priesthood taking responsibility and initiative for their own ministry, that maybe an elder should do the same thing. I shouldn't just sit around waiting for somebody to put me on the schedule or ask me to come to some other different branch or whatever. Why not talk to somebody in an outlying area where you may have only one priesthood member that's 80 years old that has to preach every Sunday to his family and get them someone else to hear occasionally? And so I talked to Dave and set this up with Dave. And it's just a matter of the elders saying, you know, I can travel so far per weekend. I can go this many miles and come back and this many miles and still function in the rest of my life. I'm going to contact the 70 up there and see if there's any help he needs, or the district president, and find out whether there's any branches where they need. Elders should be taking responsibility and initiative for their own ministry too, instead of just sitting around waiting for someone else to organize them.
Absolutely. Taking notes here. I had something I wanted to remember from what you just said. Rudy?
I'd like to suggest that the quorum functions primarily within its jurisdiction, so this quorum would be a district quorum, and it might be possible that the quorum might go through a series of lectures or whatever on a particular subject, and then feel the necessity of carrying that information to the various branches in the district. And so if we studied a subject such as, well, you know, we're studying quorums today, maybe we would like to send elders into each of the branches on a specific occasion to discuss quorum functions in branches and districts. And that's just pulling that off. But maybe there's another topic that would be better served. But I'd like to see the quorum maybe consider doing something like that on a, say, every semi-annually or something like that.
We've kind of got something like that stalled in the works somewhere, but we haven't pushed it through yet, so we need to get on that. Steve?
Yeah, and just on this topic of quorums, if we wanted to send that topic into all the branches, it might increase, that might be one way to increase our numbers here on our quorum meetings if we had a session in each of the branches on quorums.
Not a bad idea.
It's already one of our rooms, too.